Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to Season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Welcome to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. On today's show, CJ Foster trains people to run marathons. Could Paula ever run 26 miles in a row? Coach Foster will have the one-word answer. And remember, maybe is just one word. And it's time for the midterm elections. Professor of Public Policy Dr. Nicholas Duquette tells us how to cast an educated vote. One hint, if a candidate is trying to scare you, you should be scared of that candidate. I'm Adam Felber, the man who fills in his bubble completely. And now, please welcome the woman who always writes her own name in, Paula Poundstone. Welcome, Paula, and thank you to tonight's house band, the amazing double bass player, Jory Herman, from the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Whoa.
Whoa.
That music was so beautiful, I'm not dressed well enough.
No. And I should not have gotten undressed while hearing it. Paula, you just appeared on another podcast. You're two-timing us. You appeared on Jimmy Pardo's Never Not Funny.
Yeah.
You were supposed to give a one-hour interview.
That's what I saw. On my sheet, it said a one-hour interview.
And how long did you talk for?
Well, it started at 11:45, and when I got to my car, I looked at the clock, and it was 1:45, so I believe...
So you talked for 2 hours
close
straight.
Close to 2 hours, and I remember the look on the faces of the people in the studio. Horror. Just horror. Jimmy Pardo, at a couple of points, just went, "Shut up."
Did he really?
Yeah,
did he really just say, shut up? Yeah. I like Jimmy. I've met Jimmy a couple of times.
And also, he was now great. He was fun.
Now I sympathize with him in a very real way.
Yeah. They really? Yeah. It was.
Because I am no stranger to knowing, struggling to contain you.
I got started. They do this weird thing where they have you sit in one chair sort of before, like you're there, but you're not really at the table yet. Like you graduate to the table. I have no idea why they do it that way. But
did you start talking before you graduated?
I started talking before I graduated.
So you weren't even on mic. You were just
yelling. I had a mic. I did have a mic, but I started there. I think that's the part they weren't really counting on.
Right.
And by the time
I guess the whole 2 hours is something they weren't counting on.
No, I think it took them by surprise.
Jimmy, if you're out there, I'm sorry. I feel for you. I suspect this will not be known as the Poundstone episode so much as the Poundstone incident.
Well, you know, they said it was an ordeal. I think it was
an ordeal.
Actually, at the end, he said, "You can come back anytime." And so I stood outside the door for a little while, and then I knocked. And he said, "No, I meant that figuratively, like, you know, not not literally any time. So I don't.
I think he probably, what he meant by any time was never.
That's what I think he meant. That's what I think he meant by
any time. That podcast has been running for like 13 years.
Yeah.
They're a well-oiled machine until you threw a wrench.
And I covered 1 year of that for them.
You helped them get through year 14. Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, you know, when I pulled up, you know, I was in Sherman Oaks, California. You know, not a fancy neighborhood by any means. And a very nondescript, not a fancy-looking building. Until you went inside. Uh-huh. And then it was a fancy studio.
Right.
Not one discarded mattress anywhere nearby.
Oh, you're talking, of course, about the fact that there are usually discarded mattresses here on Miranda Street outside luxurious and spacious Ray Horseman Studios.
Yeah. I felt a little jealous, to be honest with you. They had a lot of decorations. They had a lot of things up on the wall that said Jimmy Pardo on them.
Right, but he's been doing this for, if we go for 13 years, I'm sure we'll get like your name on the wall somewhere.
If we go for 13 years, you'll be a wreck.
Yeah, I will be.
You couldn't possibly go. It was fun, though.
I'm just finding my stride now. Oh, I want to say about, you know, we often put down Miranda Street and the stuff on it. Tonight, I want to say it has really cleaned up its act.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Our
muscle out there, Knuckles Glickman, was pointed out to me that there are no mattresses out there tonight. There are no toilets. There's only one mini fridge.
That's because I came early.
You straightened up?
I dragged a lot of the stuff.
Oh, that was really nice of you.
Yeah, because I'm making a little house on another block.
Oh, well, you'll have ample materials by what is supplied here.
Yeah, I can't wait.
We sometimes like to kick off the show with a little entry from the Poundstone Almanac, a little bit of advice for you. And I understand that you have
I have some excellent advice
from you,
this week, which is if you're buying trash bags
and
you don't see on the picture on the box a recognizable difference between the top of the bag and the bottom of the bag, then don't buy them. People are going to thank me for this. This is going to save you so much time. So I can't tell you how many hours.
You can't get your bags open is what you're saying.
I've spent hours and hours of my life trying to smoosh the two parts of the bag together.
I'm sure our listeners are appreciating your mime work.
I'm doing a hand gesture right now. You could describe the hand gesture. That might help.
She's doing one of those I'm trying to open a bag gestures.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I've spent hours and hours, not even sure. Like if I do just bare knuckle it and pull them apart, I may be breaking the bottom of the bag. No discernible characteristic that you can see with the naked eye.
I've never had that problem with garbage bags. I've had that problem in the supermarket with the little tiny thin like vegetable bags.
Well, precisely.
Right.
Yeah.
But garbage bags always seems to me to be
no,
pretty,
they're
pretty
not
clear.
Though.
They're
well,
not.
I'm not talking about the big kind, although I could see where you could have. I'm talking about a trash bag, the tall trash bag size. But I could see where a garbage bag could have that problem too. I'm just not sure that you've done as much discarding of waste as I have.
That is entirely likely because you have 14 cats.
I have 14 cats. And so the amount of time I have saved myself by buying a tall trash bag that has a discernible characteristic that allows me to know what is the top, what is the opening of the bag.
I'm going
to
say maybe if you buy the cinch sacks, you'll have much better luck because then you can always see because usually the cinching cord is like a different color than the rest of the bag.
Yeah, you could do that.
I can't imagine that this is interesting to anybody, though.
No, but it's
what
helpful.
What we're talking about.
It's helpful.
It is helpful.
I'm not telling you, you didn't say, do you have some interesting advice?
Well,
I'm giving helpful advice.
Yeah, although arguably you want to be interesting on a podcast. Can we?
No, but this is, I'm telling you, just you wait. Uh-huh. You can write to us at where?
NobodyListensToPaulaPoundstone@gmail.com.
Right. Terrific. Do that. And please let us know the kind of time savings that you have found and what you're doing with that extra time with this advice that I've given you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to all the rolling in.
Yeah.
That's gonna be
we may have to get more help for the social networking.
Yeah. All right.
Because there's going to be so many emails coming in.
We sure are.
Yeah. Ding, ding, all night long. Ding, ding.
Our producer, Bonnie Burns, will be tortured by the dinging of emails as people talk about the immense improvement in the quality of their lives now that they're buying bags
because
with discernible
they've been,
tops.
Right, because they're able to do other things. Spend time with a family, for example. You know,
I think this might break up a couple of marriages as people have to actually look at each other instead of opening bags.
Yeah, no, people want to spend time with their family. Why? Have you been avoiding your family
by going like, oh, I would read you a goodnight story, but I got to open these damn garbage bags.
Not done with this bag yet. Be right with you.
Yeah, my gosh.
Right.
Now my excuse is gone.
Yeah, the kids cried themselves to sleep. Daddy couldn't find the top of the bag again.
Okay, now it's time for our first guest. Paula, you do exercise, don't you?
Oh, I do. I work out.
Yeah.
Yep. I have. I do Taekwondo, actually, Adam.
You do?
I do.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah, I do Taekwondo. And I, by the way, I recently acquired a Paisley belt.
A what?
I reached the level of Paisley belt.
I'm sorry. I was taking a sip of water, and I almost spit it out, but I wanted to be polite to our guest.
Yeah.
What do you mean a Paisley belt?
Paisley belt. It's part of the.
It's not. Know,
well, the guy told me it was.
You've got
a Paisley belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for, yeah.
What did you achieve to get the Paisley belt?
I can sashay around the room.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the things.
Yeah.
I have a firm handshake.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are words that I tend not to associate with Taekwondo.
Korean
martial art, right?
Yeah. It's a martial art. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's a mixed martial art.
What do you mean mixed?
It's mixed with, you know,
with sashaying and handshakes.
Yeah, apparently. It's mixed with.
Yeah,
I feel like
you're either doing it wrong or you have a really bad teacher.
No, I'm telling you, it was a tearful ceremony when I received my Paisley belt.
Who was crying?
I was weeping.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I can. I can do a lot.
Congratulations
so anyway,
on your Paisley belt.
Thank you.
Let's
I do
move
work
on
out.
To other forms of exercise. Do you
Let's
run?
Let's do it. I can barely run. I can't even make it a block, actually.
Right. Would you like to run?
I would like to run.
Okay, well,
I
want to
be like the others.
Would you like to run like maybe a marathon?
Da, da,
the others?
Da, 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 da.
That's Chariots of Fire. What do you have to do the others?
Chariots of Fire. It's a running song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yes, it is.
Yeah. What's that? My gosh, Jimmy Pardo didn't have that blank a look on his face when I talked to him. My God, I thought you were here.
I'm here. I'm always here.
Da, da, da,
I get
da,
it. Yes,
da,
the beloved Vangelis theme of Chariots of Fire. Yes. Okay, so the LA Marathon is Sunday, March 24th. It's coming up in about 5 or 6 months. You have 5 months to get ready to run. Could you do it? Here to help us figure out is C.J. Foster, marathon coach for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's team in training. He's run 19 marathons since 2005. Please welcome C.J. Foster. Yeah, and thank you, house band Jory Herman. C.J., could Paula run the L.A. Marathon?
I believe she could.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, by the way, listeners, he was looking right at me when he said it.
Right. Which, as we know from Dr. Jonathan Bowman, means he was lying.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Two episodes ago.
Well, he wasn't
ago.
Making eye contact necessarily, but he was looking right at me.
Yeah.
He was looking at my upper body when he said it. He hasn't really seen my lower body, which right. I think is important
what
in running.
What leads you to think she could do it?
I think first and foremost, you have to believe. I think as long as you put your mind to it and believe that you could do it, I think you could do it.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's other stuff like for me, when I did my first marathon, it was all about being a part of a group and being part of a team.
Oh,
and
wow.
How I got started, because I never ran marathons before,
uh-huh.
And I just got a flyer in the mail and it said, come run a marathon and raise money for cancer research.
Okay.
And I just knew I wanted to do something.
Previously, before that flyer came to you in the mail, how far had you run maximum in your life?
Maybe max 10 miles.
Okay, so that makes you already 10 miles ahead of Paula.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm running zero.
Okay.
Zero.
And you have run zero.
Yeah, I'm
but
running
there's plenty of people on our team that have never run marathons, that haven't done as much as 10 miles before.
So this was an organization that's helping raise money, and they train people to run in order to do that. Is that right?
Yeah.
Got you. Okay.
And it all started with this one gentleman whose daughter was diagnosed with leukemia.
Uh-huh.
And he felt helpless, like he wanted to help, but didn't know what he could do. And him and a bunch of his friends from work decided to start a group to run the New York City Marathon.
Wow.
And they bet all their coworkers that they could finish.
Uh-huh.
And they ended up raising about $200,000
to $300,000.
Wow. In
the process.
Wow.
Their coworkers must have had limited faith in them.
I guess.
My gosh. Yeah. And also
all
maybe a gambling problem.
Yeah. They're coerced. Can you imagine all those people thought that they had a sure thing. They're
No
way Fatso's making it to the end. And then, right. Lo and behold.
And they probably weren't even hoping for them to come over the finish line. It was probably like a running version of Wacky Racers where they did stuff like put tacks down so that they wouldn't make it over the finish line.
Probably something like that.
Co-workers.
Yeah, I know the person that donated the most got to choose his outfit. And one of them chose like purple tights. He had to run the entire marathon in purple tights.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kind of, you can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing. They cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
first sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix sleep quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code. The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Oh. And hence now Leukemia Lymphoma Society team and training program's color is purple.
Uh-huh. Do you wear tights?
I have.
Have you worn the purple tights?
I have.
In a marathon?
Yes.
Which one?
San Diego.
All right.
Doesn't it make your legs sweatier?
Unless probably a little bit.
It's probably, yeah. Wick, yeah. It's probably wicking action on that fabric down your tights, right?
But at least
it's
like wick. The fabric yeah. moving against itself is better than the skin moving against itself.
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Well, especially with my skin moving against itself.
Yeah.
I have some sizable
Paula,
thighs.
Do you think you could do a... You have perfectly nice thighs. I mean, they're...
That's really? The sound of my
That's
thighs the sound moving That's against
kind
one
of the
another.
Sound of
you know
Doritos
what?
Being crunched.
There's lubrication for stuff like that.
Is there? There's yeah. lubrication for thigh...
For running.
Rubbing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? Because I shop sometimes at top-to-top sneaker store, you know, the running shoe store. Not because I'm going to run, but because
yes, you are. You're going to run a marathon.
No, because it's a sneaker store near my house. That's why I go there, and I don't want to walk that far to another store. But they've, when I've gone there, they've never said to me, "Let me show you our lubricant."
I don't think they suspect you of running.
Yeah, no, probably not.
I think it's
last time I went on my electric scooter to get there. Yeah, I'm like,
that's a dead giveaway. That
I don't think that's something they want to bring up right away.
Oh, they don't bring up they don't even, because honestly,
lube.
I've never heard
it's called Body Glide.
Oh, it's called Body Glide. No,
that
they didn't.
That doesn't make it sound less sexual than calling it lube.
Okay.
Still sounds like the kind of thing you'd find at the pleasure chest.
Okay.
Yeah. The one guy said to me, here's some, I'm like, that sounds sexual.
Who said that to you?
One of the guys at the store.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it was,
are you sure it was a running store?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were in a store where they were panting at you and tossing lube.
He said, here's this. Yeah. Maybe I misinterpreted.
You really could have. What was the name of the store again?
No, it's Top to Top, right? That running shoe store.
Yeah, the S&M store.
Yeah. All right. Given that right now I can't even imagine running for a whole block, how would I go about training for a marathon?
Well, first and foremost, I'd say that most people that start training for a marathon tend to overtrain in the beginning.
Oh, that's not going to happen here.
They do too much running.
You mean they push themselves too hard?
Correct.
And
really?
They hit a wall.
I think I have the edge on all the other runners now.
Yeah. Well,
because Paul is not going to overtrain.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to overtrain at all.
They think they need to run 10 miles a day every day until they get to the marathon, where when we start our training the first day, let's say Monday, we go 20 minutes of running on Monday, 30 minutes of running on Tuesday, you rest on Wednesday, 30 minutes on Thursday, and then Saturday would be your long run. And in the beginning, your long run would be 3 miles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's starting with baby steps.
Which is
That's not baby steps. 3 miles isn't starting with baby steps.
It's doable.
Three miles at the end of your, and you can walk some of it, Paula.
Oh, can I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As you work your way up, right?
Yeah.
And the goal is to be running the whole time once you get to the actual day of.
The goal is to finish.
Okay. Oh. I bet Paula could finish.
Yeah.
Do you think you could finish a marathon? Or no?
I mean, I could walk for 26 miles. I'm not sure I could run for 26 miles.
So one more thing that we do as a team is we do what's called interval running.
Interval running.
Yeah. So like, especially in a beginner, we would have them do, you run for 2 minutes, you walk for a minute. Uh-huh. Run for 2 minutes, walk for a minute. And what that's doing is it's regulating your heart rate. Oh, you want your heart rate at a certain level so that you're burning fat as opposed to sugar.
Oh.
So you guys ever hear something called the wall?
Yeah.
Somebody hit the wall.
Yeah.
It's because their blood sugar level is too low.
Oh, okay.
So
Paula's blood sugar level is never too low because she loads up on these double stuffed Oreos.
And you can bring them on the run with you.
Oh, good.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is licensed to eat anything you want.
In my fanny pack. Oh, I love it so far. In my fanny pack, I'll just have double stuffed Oreos. Yeah. Okay, so I love this idea of run for 2 minutes and
walk for one minute.
Is there any way of reversing that?
Yeah, it's all about what works for you.
Oh,
hey, you're already bargaining him down to less running. and this is just the idea of running that you're bargaining.
I want to make the parameters clear. Okay. All right, so this 20 minutes and 30 minutes that you're talking about includes this run for 2 minutes, walk for 1 minute. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
So you said then Wednesday's the rest day, and then the big run was the 3 miles
on Saturday.
And you're busy that day, I'm guessing.
I am busy that day, but...
Can you do it Sunday instead?
Yes.
In 2027.
Yeah, I'm out of... Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, what about... I want to go back to the schedule in a second, but also, like, right now in my life, the balls of my feet really hurt when I run, or even walk sometimes. Is there a particular way you're supposed to be landing on your feet?
Yeah, you're actually... The best way I could describe it is, you know, like the doggy paddle, where you kind of...
Yeah.
You dog like that.
Yeah.
If you do that with your feet... Where when you land, you're on the balls of your feet and just lightly pushing off.
Uh-huh.
And another
thing, not a long stride.
No. So a lot of people that tend to have knee problems, because I'm not the smallest guy, and a lot of people are like, well, what about your knees? You're doing all these marathons. It's a lot about form and shoes, which you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
When you land, your foot has to be directly below you.
No, I wouldn't have thought that because of this long stridey thing.
Yeah. Right.
Your foot has to be directly below you when you land.
Yeah, so then all your weight is is centered.
Yeah.
Whereas if your leg is a little bit forward, now all that pressure is going to go on your knees.
Oh.
Right. So people that land on their heels, now all that pressure is on their knees. Where if you're directly above where your feet lands and you do this kind of short, quick steps on the balls of your feet, you're not going to feel all that pressure.
Right. That wouldn't work for me.
Why?
Because my knees are not over my feet anyway. I've got this extreme pronation happening.
What do you mean your knees aren't over your feet?
I've got these messed up feet, and so my knees.
Adam has the biggest feet you've ever seen in your life. Adam has Fred Flintstone feet.
Prone? I in prone.
Okay.
Yeah, because I have completely flat feet, and so I've got I've looked into it. I've gone to many doctors.
There's shoes.
Yes, I'm wearing custom orthotics right now.
Okay.
Right.
Wait a
Still
minute.
Still not going
to
make me.
How come? So
run.
You, CJ, just said to Adam, are you in prone or out prone? And both of you seem to know what that meant.
So you tend to.
Like, is this cocktail party conversation?
It's running conversation,
I guess. In prone or out prone? What does that mean?
This is why I cycle and not run, is basically what
it has to do with when you land your feet. Uh-huh. And you kind of like, you end up rolling in with your foot or you roll out.
Oh.
So if you're improning and there's nothing to help support that inner part of your foot, you're now putting all that added stress on your ankles and your knees.
All right, so you've got two beautiful medals right here, one for the Los Angeles Marathon, but I'm interested in this one here for the one in China. You ran a marathon on the Great Wall of China.
Yes.
How was that?
That was amazing. I heard about the experience years ago from a friend that he had done it, and I just knew in the back of my head it was something bucket list that I'd always would want to do.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you, I think you said that not the whole marathon was on the wall, but you started and ended with a couple of miles of wall.
Probably a total of like 5 to 6 miles on the wall. You start and then
actually on top of the wall?
Yeah.
On the Great Wall of China.
Wow. And you're not worried about wrecking it?
I guess not. I mean, it's been there.
Wrecking it?
It's already been there so many years.
Yeah, wrecking the wall.
How would you wreck the wall running?
I don't know. It's been there a long time. People running all over it.
That's what it was built for. It's a wall.
Walls are not built to run on.
That one is.
No, it isn't.
It's a big, back me up here. So
yeah, it's a big wall.
Stone path.
I think it's going
to. No, it's not made for running on. You make a wall to stop people.
It was built to support people in armor. And he's wearing purple tights.
So you think that Trump wants to build a wall for marathons? You think that's like we get?
No, I don't think that there'll be any civic good that comes out of Trump's wall. But I think when the Chinese were building the wall to repel the Mongol hordes and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
Was it the Mongol hordes?
It was.
Yeah. And how did they do with that? Did it work?
Well, they won the World Series 3 years in a row.
Who did?
The Beijing Lions. Over the Mongol hordes.
Over the Mongol hordes.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a wall to keep people out or something.
Yes, the Mongol horde.
But you can run on top of it?
Yes, because you could stand in armor on top of the wall. I don't know why this is a hard. You've seen pictures of the Great Wall of China, have you not?
I don't think so.
Really?
No. The way you're making it sounds low down. Was it a low wall?
Good would a low wall be? What Mongol horde is going to be repelled by a low wall?
Yeah, when the Mongol up front, right, the lead Mongol,
right,
sees the wall, he goes, go back, there's a wall.
We'd have to jump.
Well, they're going to make us run on the wall, go back.
Wow.
Well, no,
yeah, this
I'm not really a historian,
no.
CJ.
No.
A lot of my history.
Let's change the subject to something that you know something about then, because clearly the Great Wall of China and running are not two of those things.
Maybe we should have the listeners send in topics that I might know something about.
You might want to do that, or put that in your theme song. Let's talk about your favorite athlete in history who ran the Boston Marathon famously, Rosie Ruiz.
You know Rosie Ruiz, don't you, CJ?
I think everybody knows the story about Rosie Ruiz.
She's my favorite athlete. She's the woman who was running the Boston Marathon and took the bus partway.
The subway, I think.
Was it? I thought it was a bus. But it was just such a no harm, no foul crime. That's why I loved it. And I think what happened was...
There was
no harm, no crime.
She won the marathon and then was stripped of her title.
Yeah, so what? It didn't harm anybody. It didn't hurt anybody. It didn't rob anybody. So I think she had like the laurel wreath on her head.
Yeah.
And a couple of the women that came in after her... like the rightful owner of
the laurel wreath.
Yeah, you kind of turns to another woman and goes like, I don't remember her passing us. Do you remember her passing us? And that's when they figured out that she had taken the bus. I just love that crime. I just think That's a great sports story.
Yeah, it's a great sports story, but it's really just somebody cheating. Do you want to weigh in on Rosie Ruiz?
I just think that she must have been clueless to how long a marathon really takes.
Well, she didn't come in the first few minutes.
I know, but
no, she ran for a while, and I guess she saw the T station and ran down into it. I think she took the T. I think she was riding the MTA. Rosie on the MTA.
She might have, but I don't
and
think
then
she came.
Just goes along and plays along with it.
It's... Yeah.
Yeah. She came out and ran to the front. And, all right. Well,
I don't know.
Rosie,
awesome. I don't know.
If
I love
out
her.
There, you still have a fan in Paula Poundstone. So write it. If anybody knows Rosie Ruiz.
So does the LA Marathon go by any areas where there might be a train or a bus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to alter.
Especially the whole, like, Hollywood Boulevard part.
Yeah. There's a bus that goes right to Hollywood.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all the way into Santa Monica.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Well, then,
let me just say, CJ, I might be able to run a marathon.
Okay, one more thing before we wrap this up. CJ, have you read Peter Sagal's new book?
I have not.
Well, Paula and I both love Peter Sagal because he is the host of Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he just wrote a book that we are plugging at this moment. It's called The Incomplete Book of Running. And much like you, Peter had never been, you know, much of a runner before. He saw a race go by his house and when he was 43 years old. And he decided, I'm exactly the short, bald Jew who's going to start running marathons. And, you know, to this date, he's now run 14 of them. And he's logged tens of thousands of miles and has just written The Incomplete Book of Running. Does that interest you, CJ?
Yeah, I'll probably actually pick it up.
Yeah, it's
There you go.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Peter, we sold one for you.
And he's funny. He has that
He's very,
you know
very
what,
funny.
Though? Actually, that reminds me of something, which is when I do work out, and I do these grueling workouts with this Taekwondo guy in Santa Monica. And some of the
Who
things
you
are
think
like.
He's a Taekwondo guy.
He's a Taekwondo sachet guy. Taekwondo slash sachet. It'll be like, do push ups for 2 minutes, right? As many push ups you can do for 2 minutes. Well, Jesus.
I wish I could promise you this was going somewhere, CJ.
No, after 15 seconds, I'm ready to kill myself. And what I always think about it in like fractions in my head. Now, I'm not looking at a clock, but
sure.
If he'll say...
I am, though. It's my job.
If he says, like, okay, 1 minute's up, all I can think is, oh, my God, that means I'm only halfway there, and I'm already... dying after 1 minute. Do you see what I'm saying? What are you supposed to be thinking?
How can you
while
help
you're
Paula with
running?
The mental game?
Well, I think that's why I go back to having a team.
Yeah.
Because with the team, you have a pace group. There's usually like four or five people, same pace as you.
Uh-huh.
And the process of 4 or 5 months of training, you get to know these people better than your friends and family.
Uh-huh.
And that, a lot of times through the marathon, they're the people that get you through.
Plus, if they don't make it, you
between
can eat
conversation,
them.
You can have conversation while you're running.
Yeah. So to go back to the whole interval running.
Yeah.
Another thing that we do is called conversational pace. Conversational running.
This sounds right up my alley.
Right. You want to run at a pace. You want to run at a pace where you can have a conversation.
Right.
Because to burn fat, you need oxygen, and if you're running too fast, so you can't speak. Then you're not burning fat, you're burning sugar.
Oh, I see.
So it all goes back to the science.
Fantastic.
Wow, I love that.
Now, is it considered rude to be the only person talking for like 10 miles?
They could run faster.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the others can run up ahead of me.
Or slow down. I've done it before.
So mostly I'll be running going, hey, you guys. Yeah. Hey, you guys.
I'm not done yet. Yeah. Okay, so you got your first week. You've done it. You've done the 30 minutes on Saturday. So you're done now, ready to run a marathon.
No, so you do the 3 miles the first Saturday.
Yeah.
And then let's say the next Saturday you push it to 4.
Okay.
The week after, 5.
Right.
The week after that, you come back to 3.
Okay.
To kind of get your legs.
Oh, I see. That week. That week's
kind of give yourself
a
break.
Break for Paula.
Then the next week, you move to 6, 7, so on and so on.
Yeah. The way you say it, it sounds so doable.
Do it.
Yeah.
I bet we could get people to sponsor you, too.
Oh, please.
You wouldn't even have to wear the purple tights.
I would wear
I'll
the purple
wear them
tights,
for you.
I would wear the purple tights.
Oh, they're awesome.
So are you a trainer now for people in that group?
Yeah, so I've been with the organization since 2005, and I just did my first season last year as the coach for team and training to do the LA Marathon. And we're revving up. Our first practice for this upcoming year is going to be November 3rd.
Paula will be there.
Okay. Practice is at the Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl, Paula.
We started
at the Rose Bowl.
At 8 a.m.
Jesus, the parking will stress me out. The driving, the getting
8 a.m. it'll be fine. 8 a.m. on a Saturday, you'll be fine.
Yeah, CJ, I'll be there. Okay. Yeah, count on me.
All right, well, thank you, C.J. Foster, for getting us to the starting line. Paula, what advice can you now give listeners who are thinking about running a marathon?
Jory, if you could give me a little double bass background for my marathon running advice. Thank you. Oh, perfect. If you're thinking of running a marathon, first of all, you have to believe that you can, which for me means I have to hit my head on a rock and lose all reason. You can do it, though. You start with 20 minutes on Mondays, 30 minutes on Tuesdays, rest on Wednesday, aka the best goddamn day of the week, and on Saturday, you run 3 miles, and then you build from there. It sounds like a lot, but you don't have to run the whole time. You can run for a minute and take the bus for an hour. You also train with a thing called conversational running, and the conversation is so fascinating. Are you in-prone or out-prone?
C.J. Foster is a runner and a marathon coach for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Team in Training. You can visit teamintraining.org for more information on how to get involved. Thank you so much for being on our show, C.J. The cat of the week is Pidge from Frederick, Maryland.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I, y'all can do it, y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
All we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
McCavity! I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is sponsored or supported in part by Audible. Introducing Audible Originals, a new member benefit. Audible members now get 2 Audible Originals and 1 audiobook every single darn month.
That is nice.
Yeah, yeah. Audible Originals are exclusive audio titles by celebrated storytellers from worlds as diverse as theater, journalism, literature, and more.
Boy, that'll give you something to talk about during your conversational run.
Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. Fill your fall with more stories, like, for instance, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness by Paula Poundstone. Didn't that get some pretty good reviews there?
Yeah, pretty good.
I mean, I don't want to toot your horn when I could be tooting my own, but The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness by Paula Poundstone is also one of 8 books in the country's in the semifinals for the Thurber Prize for American Humor.
Toot!
Yeah, it's the highest recognition of art.
For American humor.
American humor.
Yeah, American humor.
Which includes Guam, I suppose, and the Virgin Islands.
And the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico.
There's some strong humor coming out of there this year, but you managed to get past them.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw that in.
It's a high honor. A book not yet nominated for Thurber Award is A True Lady by beloved romance novelist Edith Layton. The book is read by talented actress. You might know her from Mad Men, Jeannie Simpson. Little side note, Edith Layton is my mom, and Jeannie Simpson is my wife.
Yeah. This, what is that word? Nepotism.
Yes.
That's the word that comes to mind.
Okay. Well, get your first audiobook free and choose two titles from a curated list of Audible originals with a 30-day trial. Visit audible.com/Paula or text Paula to 500-500.
Another way to think of it is text Paula to 500-500.
Thank you, House Band Jory Herman. Paula, the midterm elections are coming up, right?
And oh my gosh,
I
are they?
You have a little story about the last time you voted.
The last time I voted, this has never. I've been going to the same polling place for years. I'm always like, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. How you doing? I go into the little, rickety table with the thing. I begin poking the things. I don't know what happened. Somehow I noticed that I was putting the wrong. I had to ask for another ballot.
Okay, you screwed up your ballot.
I screwed up my ballot.
Yeah, you could have just said I screwed up my ballot. But
I screwed up my.
Got that inexact description.
No, I wanted a colorful description. So I had to get, they gave me another ballot. I said, okay. Oh my gosh, I made a mistake. Gave me another ballot.
Right.
I screwed it up again.
How?
I forget. I don't have a colorful description for the second screw up.
Nor the first.
I only remember the first. I don't know. But then when I screwed up the second time and the lady handed me the third ballot.
Right.
And by the way, this was not voter fraud. It was a mistake. The lady said to me, she goes, this is the last one we can give you.
Oh.
And the pressure that I felt. I mean, I've never screwed up my ballot before, to the best of my knowledge.
And then you had done it twice.
But I'd done it twice.
And you were down to your last one. I'd imagine that might be some kind of actual legal statute. Like you get three times and then you're out. Three strikes and you're out. And then it's probably a provisional ballot.
It was like carrying a very full glass of hydrochloric acid across the floor.
Okay, so you really were careful that time.
I was so nervous. I just...
So you could have made mistakes.
I just voted straight.
This is how we got
Republican
President Trump,
ticket.
Right?
Oh, no! Oh, my God!
Republican, no
problem. Oh, my God, I did screw it. Is it too late, then, to ask for my ballot back? Oh, that's my question.
Well, we're going to get to that, because we're going to find out just how to be smart about voting, both in the voting booth and before you get there. Dr. Nicholas Duquette is a professor at USC's Price School of Public Policy. Please welcome Dr. Nicholas Duquette. Dr. Nick, welcome. Can I call you Dr. Nick?
Sure.
No, I don't have to. It's like an Elvis Presley thing.
I have a conversation with my students all the time because they vacillate between calling me professor and yo buddy, and so we have to negotiate that space in between. But Dr. Nick is new, and that might be.
I believe
what we
that was Elvis's doctor who basically killed him with amphetamines and stuff.
Oh, is that true? Oh, yeah, so you might want to steer clear of the Dr. Nick label.
It's kind of fun, though. You know, Elvis's death is now fun.
Well, I think for everyone but Elvis, yes.
Well, yeah. Well, Dr. Duquette, we just heard about Paula's last voting experience, but at least she was out there voting. What percentage of Americans actually take the time to vote, and what's wrong with people?
Well, to start with the first part of the question, in a presidential election year, it's about 60% of people who are eligible to vote, which is already low.
Yeah.
In other countries, in Europe and Australia and places that we think of as being like us, they usually get more like 75%.
In Australia, typically. It's a law, isn't it? You have to vote.
Yes. They're one of the most voting people. Now, that includes
people. I
believe
that's technically votey people. They're the votiest people out there.
They're very votey.
Yeah. Okay.
Which might actually be a curse word in Australia, too, because they have their own.
Votey.
That's why they made it mandatory.
Yeah.
But
why did they make it mandatory? Were people not voting before, or was it just always mandatory from the time that they began this democracy thing?
Well, there's always a trade-off between trying to encourage people to vote and not... trying to burden them with more stuff that they have to go do.
Right.
And
trying to encourage them to vote and locking them up for not voting. That there's a trade-off.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't think they lock people up, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't you see Papillon?
No, I didn't. Is that about an Australian who failed to vote and ended up in prison?
I think so.
You think so?
I might be misinterpreting some of the film.
I think
but...
so. All right, so what's wrong with people, Dr. Duquette?
Well,
what's wrong with Americans?
Part of it is that they don't, I think, appreciate how much else is on the ballot besides the presidential races that get so much attention. So the upcoming election is a midterm election when actually even fewer people vote. In our most recent midterm election in 2014, it was just over a third
of people who were allowed to vote
even showed up and did it.
Wow. Just
so people, wait, I cut you off. Say that again. People what? Showed up and did it?
Showed up and cast a ballot.
So just over a third.
It was 36%, if you want to be really
specific. Of the eligible voting public.
That's right.
Wow. Are we expecting more this year? Because it's a kind of hotly debated midterm election?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. So during the summer, the PRRI Institute, which I'm now drawing a blank of what they stand for, probably polling and something
research
something institute.
Related institutional stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think cryptographer Adam Felber nailed that.
Thank you very much.
Polling related research institutional stuff. Yeah.
They asked people if they expected to vote, and it depended a lot on what kind of person they were talking to. Senior citizens, about 74% said that they were planning to vote, but only just over a quarter of people age 18 to 29 said that they were definitely going to vote in this election.
That might go rough for the Democrats, wouldn't it?
You know, when you say, who asked them and what form of communication did they use to ask? The PRRI asked, but what, they make phone calls and say, are you planning on voting? This is PRRI. Are you planning on voting?
That's a good question. And something that pollsters have been having a lot of trouble with is that many people who are 18 to 29 or just tired of paying an extra $50 a month, don't have those landline phones anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not so simple to just call people's cell phones. There are rules against telemarketing and badgering the daylights out of people. So.
Although I have to say, recently, my cell phone, it used to be that when I answered the landline, it was always like some telemarketing. But recently, my cell phone has been deluged with that stuff. But when I get called by like a pollster, I just politely bow out.
Uh-huh.
I'm too busy to answer. I'll answer at the polls. I mean, I vote, but I don't want to answer questions.
You don't want to talk to pollsters.
I don't want to talk to pollsters. So I'm saying this with a little feeling of hope, really more hope than I have about running a marathon even. I'm saying a little feeling of hope that maybe, even though statistically it doesn't sound like the prediction is as high as we need it to be, that maybe really it'll be higher because it's just people that are going to go to the polls, but they're not going to talk about it over the phone.
Sure. And it is just a prediction. The, you know, whatever people told pollsters in the middle of the summer, it's not like planning this path of a meteorite or something.
No.
There's
a lot of variables along the way.
Yeah. And people could decide that they changed their mind and they can show up and vote.
Yeah.
Now, am I required to vote for everything that's on the ballot, even if I have no idea what an item is?
No, you don't have to vote for anything.
You can leave out stuff.
You can leave out stuff. You can leave individual questions blank if you,
but do they take points off?
No. That's
your final score?
No, that's the SAT.
Oh, my mistake. That's a different thing.
And that's just if you guess. If you leave it blank, then I think
You don't get anything if you leave it blank. I think if you get it wrong, you lose a point or something.
Yeah, I think that's
so
right.
On the SATs we're talking about.
Now we're talking about the SATs for no good reason.
Yeah, no. You know what I do with the SATs? I used a straight edge and answered all Bs.
How'd you do? You didn't go to college.
Not well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But I think everyone's always wanted to know how that would work. And I did. Right.
You went ahead and did that.
I did it, and the answer is not good. So wait. All right. So there's so much on the ballot that I don't. I actually brought my sample ballot with me. There's so much that I don't know. Now I realize that we're in California, because I have a GPS.
You're unsealing your ballot book now.
I am currently unsealing my ballot book, which tells you a sad piece of information about how much research I've already done.
Yeah, and how prepared you are for this interview.
Yeah, well, I wanted to unseal it so people would understand that this is not prepared in any way.
I feel like our audience is on that page.
If every state does it the same as we do, but just here's just an example. I'm only on the early pages here, and I'm already at the part where you vote on judges. Does every state vote on their judges?
No. Many states don't.
And why do we?
Why does California specifically?
Yes.
So the states that vote on judges decided that it was more important to have people have a chance to say who is going to be the person judging them and you know, making decisions about things like, you know, major stuff, going to jail,
but
paying a big
settlement. But no one knows the judges. That's the problem. No one knows.
That does seem to be a real problem.
Well, except for criminals. Criminals know the judges.
Right. That's why they're always getting off easy, because they're installing judges who are just giving them a slap on the wrist. Am I right, Dr. Duquette?
Well, whatever their consequences may be, almost every state doesn't allow people in prison to vote. The only states that fully protect convicted criminals' voting rights are Maine
but
and Vermont.
Families can vote.
That's true.
You know, I know.
But do their families really know the judges?
Yeah.
That's a good point. Nobody knows the judges, I think, is Paula's point.
Yeah, nobody does know the judges. Oh, I know this guy, Hang 'em Harry. Yeah, nobody knows these judges. And then when they put out information about themselves, what could they possibly say? I mean, they're supposed to be just fair, right? So what would you write about yourself as a person running for judge? Because I'm really, really fair. I mean,
yeah. Or the negative ads, like Judge Thomas says he's fair, but is he?
Doesn't seem
Last
fair
Christmas,
to me.
It looked like he took the biggest slice of pie. Enjoy that dessert, Judge Thomas.
Or they'll use the Trump thing. Many people say he's not fair.
I'm hearing he's not fair.
Yeah, people are saying. I think that whenever you say people say something, you should have to show a picture of the people saying it. That just should be a law.
Absolutely. Okay.
So I don't know why we vote on. And then if you don't vote on judges, like how do they, the states that don't vote, how do they get their judges? Do they just start in a petri dish and they develop?
So in the states that don't vote, they're usually appointed in the same way that they are at the federal level.
And who appoints them? The ones
the governor,
in the states?
And then the legislature would approve them, I guess.
The governor.
Yeah, usually the governor.
Unless the governor is in prison, in which case...
Well, he could still appoint. He just wouldn't be able to vote.
Oh, okay.
I love the idea of us being governed by a guy in prison.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's
go
fantastic.
To Illinois. It's the best place.
Let's get to ballot questions, because ballot questions are, I guess, California is uniquely screwed because we have ballot initiatives which are binding, right?
That's right.
So other states don't do this malarkey?
It varies a lot from state to state how binding they are and how many different ways they can get onto the ballot. Because one of the weird things about California is that you can go out and hustle enough signatures.
Got to get a million, I think it is, right? Million signatures. And it puts your proposition, what law you want, puts it on the ballot for the voters to decide. So long as you and, you know, and your buddies get a million signatures saying that people want that on the ballot.
Sure.
Right, which is why we in California basically voted away our property taxes and destroyed our public school system, right?
Because everyone said, no, we don't want property taxes.
Yeah, well, what good are they?
Yeah.
And then the next is, why are our schools crumbling?
Yeah, definitely in California we've made some terrible, terrible mistakes. Now, so in other states they don't do the propositions then, or they do them different?
Well, it varies a lot state to state. So on paper, Texas doesn't have, for instance, to pick another big state with a lot of people, they don't have the procedure where a citizen can go out and get signatures and submit it. The
only Too much
thing
driving.
They don't even have. Right. Yeah, they don't even have the arrangement where a citizen can vote in Texas, do they?
Well, they do for white citizens.
Yeah, exactly.
White guys can vote.
As a black person, you have to get a million signatures signed to be able to go to vote.
And a note from your doctor.
Which is a different idea, I think.
But what they do have in Texas are relatively easy constitutional amendments to the state constitution. So they've amended their state constitution about 500 times.
Wow.
Which is a lot more than, you know, the U.S. Constitution has.
Well, what are we at now? 28 or something? Or?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but how many? But how many of those are good?
Six.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, but here's something about ballot initiatives. They're written so confusingly that there's really no way for an average person to read a ballot initiative and know what voting yes or no means, right? I mean, my rule of thumb is generally if there's a TV commercial that says that the ballot initiative is poorly written, I'm probably voting for it. because you know, the ad is going to be something like, the initiative to not eat kittens is a good idea. We all think kittens shouldn't be eaten, but this is a poorly written bill.
So if it's poorly written, you would want to eat kittens?
No, I don't want to eat kittens. I think that that probably the attack ad is wrong and that you should vote for the Don't Eat Kittens initiative.
I'm always troubled by the names of them. You know, the names of them are often, you know, it'll be like the law for families. And then you read it and it turns out it has something to do with banking.
Right.
And you're just like, why were they allowed to name it?
Now that we've made like 15 statements, and I'm guilty of this too, that didn't culminate in a question. What do we do about these incomprehensible ballot initiatives?
I'm taking a page from the Chris Matthews book of interviewing. This is how Chris Matthews interviews. Am I right? Am I right?
So is she right?
I don't...
You know what's funny about that is that Dr. Duquette looks quite a bit like Chris Hayes.
He does look a lot like Chris Hayes. Yeah. Oh, fuck, I wish I was Rachel Maddow.
I promise you we're going to let you talk at some point.
Well, I'm not even sure which question. Are we on the right
question? What do we do about those ballot initiatives?
Sadly, you just articulated me voting.
I want to see the Are You Right initiative on the ballot.
Are you right? Am I right? Am I right?
There's a few things you can do. Obviously, the best way to figure out what is going on in a very confusing initiative is to go do your own research and try to figure out more about what is going on with it. So one thing that you may have received is the here in California, we typically get stuff in the mail that is a voter guide explaining the text. The actual text is presented poorly written or well written or, you know, in blank verse, whatever it is. And then they allow people to submit citizen statements in favor or against it, which sometimes can be illuminating. Sometimes you can get a sense of who are the prominent people who are in favor of or against. And sometimes there's just one crazy person who submitted a statement and they're not that helpful. The other thing
I got one here that's argument in favor, like it's a clean water bill. Of some sort. And in support of it is the mayor of Los Angeles, a woman who's director of public health, fire chief, aquatic biologist. These are like different people. They're not all, they don't all do the same thing. Water scientist. And it begins with water. This is the explanation. Water is life. And then it proceeds. Now I go to the rebuttal to argument. And the first phrase is absolutely amazing.
Amazing in a negative way, I take it.
I think so, yeah. And the supporters are
snarky.
One of them, it says Ed Winnetka, and it says just a guy.
Oh, wow. So everybody's for this clean water initiative except Ed Winnetka.
Yeah, it seems like it's a lot of people that are well qualified
Dr.
on
Duquette,
one side.
Where do you stand on the water initiative on this year's ballot?
I think I'm going, but this actually might be helpful. I can tell you how I came to my opinion about
it. Oh, I love that idea.
So I read those summary statements and I didn't feel like Ed had given me the full perspective.
I just want to give Ed's rebuttal right now. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Actually, if Ed Winnetka is listening.
Go ahead and write for Christ's sakes right after that.
Good for Ed Winnetka, though, that he actually sent in a statement because I think they have a process to decide which is the most well-written statement.
Wow, and if Ed's is the most well-written.
And Ed rose to the top. But the other thing that I do that I find helpful is to go look at newspaper endorsements. The LA Times, the San Jose Mercury News, they'll usually endorse one side or the other and then explain why. And if it's the one I'm thinking of, the Times actually said that we should... I swear we didn't talk about this beforehand. If I remember correctly, the LA Times said to vote no on that one because it was not well written.
Oh, is that true?
Vote yes, everybody.
I like water. It's life. I'm going to vote yes on that.
Absolutely amazing.
You look disgusted, Ed.
That is a stance, I should say. It's yes on water, no on good prose.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, I don't even know. I really just glanced at it. I really don't even know what the water law would be. I don't know if it's good or bad. But is it possible for a rebuttal to just begin with, what the fuck?
Possible, but it might not get chosen, I think.
A
citizen has to submit it. Well, there's more than... I'll submit one that reads that.
What's a lieutenant governor? Paula wanted to know about that.
Yeah, what's a lieutenant governor? Now, do they wear a uniform? Do they carry a weapon? What is a lieutenant governor?
That's just you know, a traditional way referring to someone. A lieutenant governor isn't like a military lieutenant any more than Mike Pence has to indulge every form of vice. it's
well put.
Yeah, thank you.
He doesn't.
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence.
Doesn't. Well, it depends how you define vice.
Yeah, of course.
He seems like a homophobic rat fucker. He does that.
Right. And that's a vice.
I think so. to me, that's a vice.
It's interesting that he would be so homophobic and yet so into rats in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but only straight rats.
Right. It's just a thing between a straight guy and a straight rat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That just happens.
Yeah. Exactly.
Happens in the locker room. We never talk about it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He checks it. Mike Pence. If Mike Pence gets a dog, he makes sure it's not gay.
Right.
And you can tell, by the way.
How can you tell? You can tell the dog's gay?
Some about the way they wag their tail. You can...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
See, I've got terrible canine gaydar. Because I was... One minute like, this dog is straight as an arrow, and the next minute I'm like, he is humping my leg.
Yeah, it's something to... It's not just that he's humping your leg, it's...
This other... You can just tell.
It's... The way
taste in movies.
The way he cleans up his room. You can tell.
Okay.
You can just tell.
I can't remember the last time that we asked Dr. Duquette a question.
I'll tell you something about a gay dog. Yeah. They tend to lint lift a lot.
They lint lift?
Yeah. They tend to always be brushing the fur off their pants.
Pants.
It's just something to look for. Yeah. A gay dog...
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure.
When another dog comes over to a gay dog, he's like, "Oh, come on,
stop lint brushing me."
Yeah, he's like, "No, you can't.
I'm a straight dog.
You're getting fur all over my fur.
I so badly want to
get
back
to our civics right
lesson.
Now. All right, sorry.
So Lieutenant Governor is kind of like the vice president of the governorship.
Track.
Pretty much. When the state governor is out of the state or dead, then the the lieutenant governor steps in to...
To do what?
To
govern.
To perform the same role, the roles of the governors.
Oh,
runner-up to
America. It's such a creepy... That's such an awful...
You need a contingency plan.
You just picture them hovering over. You just picture Gavin,
like Gavin Newsom.
Gavin Newsom for years calling Jerry Brown, "How you feeling? How you feeling? You okay?
You look pale."
Yeah, you know, you might want to sit down.
Well, But at least he's...
By the way, I love them both.
He's just hovering. So I actually just learned recently that when the first time Jerry Brown was governor, he had a different guy. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but Jerry Brown went out of town for a few days.
Guy did Linda Ronstadt?
And what?
What?
Oh, that's
no,
awful.
Let him tell his story. The lieutenant governor didn't do Linda Ronstadt.
I think I heard what the professor just said.
No, that's not what he said at all. He said one time Jerry Brown left the state and the lieutenant governor did something.
Yeah, I heard exactly what he said. He did Linda Ronstadt.
What were you saying, Dr. Duquette?
I was going to say he signed some legislation into law, but I think what Paul heard is way more interesting.
Yeah. No, it definitely is.
Yeah, they went to that little taco place on Melrose together.
They did not.
They did. No. And when Jerry Brown went out of town, Linda Ronstadt went with the lieutenant governor to the little taco place.
I'm going to have to call bullshit on you right here. There's a lot of reasons why I would, but number one is, why would they be going out to a taco place on Melrose when the seat of our government is, in fact, in Sacramento?
No, you don't know. I'm telling
Which
you, that place
like
is still
miles
there.
Miles away.
No, there's a place, not to people who don't live in California, it isn't. There can be an earthquake in
San... People have maps. No. They can tell you're full of it.
No, they don't. There can be an earthquake. Look, okay, did you ever see the show The Mentalist?
No.
Okay, well, I don't know how to help you. You've seen it, haven't you, sir?
No.
You haven't seen The Mentalist?
No. The Mentalist or
Mentalist.
The Mentalist?
With Simon Baker?
I haven't seen that either.
It's a Simon Baker vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah, where there's an elite police force in California, the CBI.
Wow, we're circling no closer to voting at this moment.
Okay, wait. All right, so, yes, Linda Ronstadt and Jerry Brown used to go to a taco.
Because we're kind of up against it right now.
Yes, I have a question. If I screw up my ballot a third time when I go, because I am voting on, is it November 6th?
Yeah.
That's when I'm going in.
Pretty sure it's November 6th.
On November 6th, by golly, I'm going to be there at the lawn bowling place that is my polling place. If I screw up my ballot three times, on the off chance that might happen, what happens?
So a spoiled ballot is one that is marked incorrectly or defaced or... otherwise not filled out appropriately. And yes. So typically the way that it is handled varies according to state law and exactly what you did to screw it up.
Okay.
If it's you know, like set on fire or something, then they just won't count it entirely. Ballots that are spoiled, for instance, because it's not clear what the voter intended to do. You know, the bubbles were marked with an X instead of being properly filled in. You will usually get counted if the intent can be.
Well, ours, we have some sort of inky thing that you poke through a hole.
Yeah.
So we don't, you know, you don't have the option of crossing out or making a circle. You just poke the thingy through the hole. I think what happened to me is I somehow transposed the yeses and the noes. And so I was reading it and I was thinking that I was poking yeses and I was doing the opposite. So I didn't support
families. I guess the real question here is the person at Paula's polling place, were they just kind of BSing her about this is the last ballot they're allowed to give? Or was it really going to go to a provisional ballot after that?
I don't actually know what the rules are as far as the three strikes you're out. This is the first situation like this that anybody has ever told me about.
All right, we'll all look into it.
But if you do run into a situation where you may not be allowed to exercise your right to vote, you still it is recognized as a thing that we want people to do, even if it looks like there might be some kind of screw ups somewhere. Typically,
what if I get there, which has been my polling place forever? Now I happen to have my sample ballot, and so I do know what my polling. But what if I went? What if I didn't read it because I'm so used to going to the same place, and now I show up, and it turns out they've moved me to a different place, and I can't get there.
So they tell you you're at the wrong place, or that your address is filled out wrong, or you spelled your name wrong, or your voter registration.
Yeah.
You can submit a provisional ballot,
which is.
It's a form where it's all the questions that are on the regular ballot, and then there is also a place where you can enter your name and ID number and whatever the requirements are of your state, saying who you are and asserting that I have the right to vote and. Yeah,
and they'll count that vote if they need to count provisional ballots.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So they don't count it right away.
Because someone has to look at it and go back to the records and figure out if you really did mess up something or if the state is obligated to count it.
So
if it's a cliffhanger, they use the provisional ballot, and if it isn't, then they don't.
It really does vary state by state. Some states, I believe, they are obligated to count them all, and they usually are more forgiving about people who show up. So the other thing to keep in mind is that what you need to bring to vote varies a lot state by state as well. In California, you don't need to bring ID or anything unless your registration turns out to be messed up, but for very narrow reasons. They're pretty forgiving. If you're voting in Tennessee,
there's new voter ID laws and stuff like that.
If you're voting in Tennessee, you need to bring a driver's license, a passport, or one of those state IDs that's basically a driver's license without the car part.
If you're voting in Tennessee, you have to bring a music sample.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you have to bring like an MP3 of a country western
song
that you've recently written.
Yeah. How about like Memphis Blues, any of that?
Yeah, no, it has. Well,
it's just Nashville?
Yeah, it's just Nashville now,
right,
but
great.
It's surely going to spread.
Of course it is. Well, thank you, Dr. Nicholas Duquette, for being our voter's guide. Paula, what advice do you have for people before they go into the voting booth?
Jory, can you give me a little bit of background for my voter information? Voters can read newspapers to inform themselves. Let me repeat that. Voters can read newspapers to inform themselves. Only 60% of Americans vote, even in the presidential election. And for the midterms, only 36%. So the answer to the question, what's wrong with us, is 40% of Americans suck during the presidential election and 64% suck during the midterms.
Thank you, Dr. Nicholas Duquette, for being our voter's guide. Dr. Nicholas Duquette is a professor at USC's Price School of Public Policy. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you to our house band, Jory Herman. Paula, we've been talking about voting, and you can vote with your ears by listening to your favorite Maximum Fun podcasts. Here are a couple of ones that I know you'll enjoy.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek? Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. But you change your mind.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I, before children, definitely didn't think it was going to be this hard. Yeah. I'm going to ask my children to do X, Y, or Z, and they're going to do it.
And I'm going to lead by example. They're going to know. They're going to do it because they're going to see me doing it.
Right.
And children naturally want to please adults.
Yeah. You know what? I'll make it kind of fun.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun.
Totally.
But I won't necessarily use bribes. And I would never use threats.
Right.
That was my pre-child thinking.
Yes.
And, like, if somebody came in and saw us doing this, they would judge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like our show, leave us a review on iTunes.
If it's between voting in the midterm election and leaving us reviews, please vote in the midterm election.
Right.
I hate the idea. What if we're getting a bigger turnout?
Right. I can't imagine a scenario where it would be between voting in the midterm elections and reviewing us.
I'm just trying to take a burden off of people.
Well, that's really nice of you.
Yeah. But it would be great if people left reviews. That would be good.
You can email us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
Or find us on Facebook, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and follow us on Twitter.
And you can visit Paula's website, www.paulapoundstone.com, to find out where she's going to be appearing live. Paula, where are you going to be next?
I'll be in Davis, California at the University of California, Davis on November 29th. And on December 14th, I'll be at the Wilbur Theater in Boston, Mass. And it's not too early to start thinking about New Year's Eve, is it, Adam?
No, it's not.
When I'm going to be performing in San Francisco at the Norse Theater.
People should start planning for that.
I think it's time.
Yeah.
I think imagine, you know, every year I say to people, come on, let's, you know, it's a terrible year that we've just gotten through.
Yeah.
Come laugh the night away and we'll start anew and it'll be better next year. I'm not making that promise this year.
Right. You do promise they'll laugh the night away.
They'll laugh the night
but
away.
But they're just going to wake up to more of the same.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless, possibly, if people vote in the midterms on November 6th.
On November 6th. We should really fact check that November 6th thing before we put this podcast out.
But I think I'd feel like an idiot if it wasn't November 6th.
Oh, no, you won't.
I'll know because when I go to my polling place, there'll be lawn bowling instead of voting. Because I go to where I vote is a lawn bowling place.
I don't think you vote at an actual polling place. Just like I think you're getting your sneakers from an S&M dungeon, I think you're probably filling out like a burger card at the counter.
That's probably what's wrong with like 40% of the voters during the presidential election is they're simply not at the polling place.
Or just one of the voters.
No. Don't look at me like that.
What? I'm just saying.
You know, Adam, we haven't mentioned that I'm offering the discerning consumer a remarkably soft tri-poly blend shirt on my website with a self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back.
Well, that's terrific. But also, by the way, I looked it up. And tri-poly blend just isn't a thing.
Yes, it is. It's remarkably soft.
I know it's soft.
Yeah.
But
if you look up the phrase remarkably soft, it'll say tri-poly blend.
It won't. It won't say tri-poly blend kind of anywhere because what you're talking about, I'm pretty sure, is a two synthetic fiber, one part cotton shirt.
No, it's a tri-poly blend.
No, it's rayon and polyester and cotton.
No. But we are at the Rayon Horseman Studios.
We are at the Rayon Horseman Studios. And you at home, I know nobody listens to Paula Poundstone, but please hear this. Vote, vote, vote.
Okay, I hope you heard that. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by the mighty Ray Horseman. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Jory Herman, member of the Los Angeles Philharmonic double bass section. His website is joryherman.com. Thanks again to our guests, CJ Foster and Dr. Nicholas Duquette. Our security guard at Ray Horseman Studios is Jonah Knuckles Glickman.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
There you go.
Woo, Joy, you were fantastic.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.